Good morning. This is Carrie Cassidy and Bill Ryan from Project Camelot, and we're here with Duncan O'Finian. It's Monday, April 13th, 2009. Hello, Duncan, and it's lovely to talk to you.
It's great to be back with you guys.
We're going to go into some of the things that you've been experiencing lately and try to kind of catch up because it's been quite a while since we've spoken. We are going to be talking about some things that are going to be on record here, and then there also will be some asides that will be off record.
Sure. What's going on with myself and some others that came out of some of these projects is not supposed to happen. We've always known that I have one embedded alternate personality, which we now know has a name. And that name is Omega Unit 197. That's his designated name. We just call him 197. The alternate personalities were the torture-based integrated personalities created by the government scientist or the mill lab scientist that were used on various black operations. But what is happening is these alternate personalities are becoming self-aware, almost like a computer becoming self-aware. You see, one personality was not supposed to be in touch with the other personality. We were supposed to switch via words, symbols, signals, tones, sounds, etc. But some of us are starting to switch on a daily basis. I'm switching without realizing it. It doesn't take the fight or flight syndrome to make me switch anymore. It could be a glitch in the original programming. I definitely believe it's something that was completely unforeseen by the original programmers. We have found four distinct personalities in me. You know, I have the one that's talking now, I have 197, I have a little boy, and what we've been able to ascertain is that the little boy is who the personality is who I was at the moment of the split. So the little boy is just like lost in there. And then there's one that we call the berserker. And that personality is damn near animalistic.
To use the words from the Hulk movie, that you wouldn't want to make angry, right?
Right, right. That one manifested a couple of months ago, and the only thing it wanted to know was what were the orders. And when no order could be given, it went back to sleep.
That's very interesting.
Sounds like you're at the bottom of a deep, deep well. Part of this is probably my hearing problem. I'm having a lot of pain in my ears the past couple of days.
Okay.
I'm sorry to hear that, Duncan. I remember that you told us that you were having this progressive problem when we first met you a couple of years ago.
Yeah, it's been progressively, month after month, just getting worse.
Oh, God. Okay.
When you say what we have found, who is we? Is this a group of you who have been through the same program, who have been comparing notes, or is some professional who understands this stuff in a position to help you or to help you all? Can you tell us a little bit about how it is that you've come to do this research on yourself and your companions?
To answer your first question, both. There is a small group of us who came out of these other projects. One that I'm working with now, I actually helped train. And we were on various assignments together. We share a lot of the absolute same memories. And we each have separate memories that we're still working on. We also have a professional psychologist who is an expert in multiple personality disorder who has worked with black operations people in the past. And he recognizes exactly what's going on, and he has been a tremendous help. So I have someone else, psychologist, that we're working with as well, who is a very close friend of the one lady that I worked with. And she's the one who connected us together. And it's getting scary, guys. It's like some of these alternate personalities have their own agendas.
Isn't it possible that this is a sign of health, though, actually, that these walls are breaking down and that you're starting to become aware of you know, exactly what's going on, and that maybe the personalities themselves might, if you're saying they're becoming self-aware, are they becoming aware of each other?
Yes, exactly right. And it's almost like we're communicating with each other. The only way to tell now, you at one time years ago, if I switched to 197, it was obvious. All right. Even when 197 spoke, it was obvious. There was no accent, no nothing. But the eye colors, the color would always change. Now, that is basically the only thing this personality cannot hide is the changing of the eye color. And he is able to switch so completely and so covertly, unless you notice the eye change, you can't tell.
Is this understood, Duncan, how it is that the eye changes color? Because that's like a micro version of shape-shifting, isn't it? It implies that there's a DNA structural change going on, happening at a moment's notice, which is what some people say is impossible. Do you understand this at all?
I do, but I have multiple witnesses who sit there and say, my God, your eyes turn bright green. My eyes are not green. But when I switch personalities, my eyes turn green. Right now, it's a fight of trying to keep the different personalities under control and to figure out exactly what it is they want. They obviously seem to have their own agendas. So what those agendas are, we just don't know at this time. We don't know if those agendas are good or bad. But we do know that they're not under the control of MILLABS. My honest guess, and I'll say it for the record, they want revenge. They want payback.
Is this something that the other people that you're with are also experiencing in terms of their other personalities wanting revenge?
Some are, yes. Absolutely.
Because I don't know if this can be on record, and you can tell me, because I think you might know, Daniel McBee, I call him Daniel McBee. You know who I'm speaking of?
Yes.
Okay. Is he one of those people?
Not that I'm aware of. Dan B and I have spoken many times. We've met face-to-face a few times. I am not aware that his alternate personality is manifesting at this time.
I heard that there was to have been a radio program that was going to have called you, and you weren't available or they couldn't get hold of you, but Dan came on instead, and he was described on the internet as Dan Doe, like John Doe, but Dan Doe, and that he told his story on the radio instead. And that was a relatively short time ago, but I haven't listened to that yet. I've got it marked for listening.
Yeah, I remember that. That wasn't this last time I was in the islands. It was actually the time before. I've been traveling to St. Thomas very frequently here the past few months on business.
You're not on St. Thomas now, right?
No, I'm in Kentucky now.
Okay.
Just like what you guys and I were trying to do, which was to set up a phone call while I was down there, and for whatever reason, neither side could get a call through, and they called Dan, and Dan took the show for me that night. And I have not listened to all the program. Quite frankly, I never listened to myself talk.
Do you know why you're going to St. Thomas? Because in our interview with you originally and Corso, St. Thomas was where you were recognized. Originally, you didn't know why you were recognized there, but it was a fascinating incident, a number of incidents that went on there. And it's certainly a military enclave, and I'm wondering if you know why it is you're going there.
I know exactly why. That reason is twofold. We'll get the simple one out of the way first. It's business. I have a more than partial interest. I own a full power of attorney over a section of property down there on Smith Bay that has rental houses on it that I'm in charge of. The main reason is the island of St. Thomas is 197's home. That's where he was created. That's where he's from.
Where 197 was created?
Correct. That's where the splitting process took place.
I see. And so 197 goes back there. Do you think that there is a, maybe there's a scalar frequency being beamed at you to bring out these personalities, or perhaps programming that's going on when you're at in St. Thomas? Do you have missing time at all when you're there?
No, not missing time. As far as the scalar waves or electronic emissions, I would agree with that. What a lot of people don't know is just to the west of St. Thomas, of course, is Puerto Rico. Puerto Rico has the largest underwater submarine base in the world. Not well known, but it is a fact. People who know me down there and who also know me here have made the comment numerous times that when I go to St. Thomas, I'm like a kid on the island. You know, I'm no longer 48, nearly 49 years old. I'm 15, 16 again. I'm like a kid. You know, it's like everything just lifts off of me. The island has, it has almost a magical feel, if that makes any sense. And
do you think that this feel is a result of programming? I mean, islands theoretically are nice places. However, is it possible that this is an implant to make you feel that it is, you know, a lovely, wonderful place to attract you back to it numerous times?
It is. That's very possible. You know, I've been to Puerto Rico many times. I lived right on the ocean more than once. I've been to some of the other islands. I don't have the same feeling that I have when I'm in St. Thomas. It could be the fact that, you know, I have memories of being a kid, of being a small boy on St. Thomas, and I think it's a combination of things, but I think it comes back to that is where the traumatic personality split first took place when I was a child, was in St. Thomas. Not on St. Thomas proper. It was on one of the Channel Islands that's around. The building actually still stands, and it's government property cordoned off, and no one's allowed over there, but I'm working on it.
So are you feeling that if these personalities are starting to come through on their own, is it making you uncomfortable? Are you feeling that there is communication such that you, Duncan, that I'm talking to, can calm, say, 197 down if 197 is aggravated or something like that?
That's the $64,000 question, girl. I was told, let me preference it with this. I was told a couple of years ago by someone that if I could not reconcile the two personalities, then I would probably die. Well, I think that's happening. There's a lot of things going on at the subconscious level that the conscious, my conscious level isn't aware of until after it's done, once it's completed. I think what has to happen, what must take place, is a total merging of these two personalities. Now, the other two that have manifested, geez, I don't know what to do with those. The berserker is frightening. Extremely frightening. The little boy I can deal with. And going back to Dan Doe, when he was here and we spent 3 days together, he wanted to go to the gym where I worked out so he could observe. And he did. And he was witness to my eye color changing. So I shifted from this personality to 197 personality during a heavy lift, and he saw it. He commented, he said, "Dude, your eyes just changed." But to me, it was like everything was in slow motion. You know, it's a really weird feeling.
You're saying when he said, "Dude, your eye color just changed," he's talking to the Duncan that I'm talking to right now, isn't he? And then, but what's happening is that you've already changed over to 197. So 197 is receiving the speech, right? So how does 197 react to that information?
You see, the thing we have to keep in mind is that 197 hears and sees everything that I did. He's completely aware of everything that's going on.
Right.
What happened that day, I was doing a heavy bench press. And once I got jacked the weight up and started to bring it down, he said my eyes changed. And then I pressed it up, re-racked the weight and set up, and my eyes went back to normal. 197 manifested, pressed the weight, did the lift, and then went back. Because I don't think I could have done that lift by myself.
I see. So it was like an adrenaline shift.
Right. And then he went on to talk about theta waves and whatnot, and I'm totally lost on that. I'm trying to research it, but I'm not a scientist.
But you are working with, as you say, a psychologist.
Yes.
Does he regress you at all? Does he use that kind of therapy where he would take you back to either incidents in this life and or even a prior life?
No. We tried that once several years ago. I think I mentioned that. And 197 manifested and was going to kill the hypnotherapist.
Okay.
Yes, most definitely. That needs to be done. But at the same time, I don't think it can be done unless I am severely secured.
Okay. I'm assuming that some of the other people in your group are, you said their other personalities are spontaneously coming forward as well, and that vengeance is their agenda. Is that true?
Yeah, that seems to be, but not the kind of vengeance of go out and raise bloody hell and mayhem. More to the point, I think, of vengeance of let's bring this out, let's pull these people out of the rabbit hole and hold them up for everybody to see. More of that kind of vengeance because, you know, our alternate personalities are extremely intelligent, much more intelligent than we are in our born personalities. So they look at things more analytical. They break things apart much more than we do. And they're very much aware that to just go out and cause bloody mayhem would serve absolutely no purpose. It would not serve their purpose, for sure. So they want the truth. They want these things exposed. But at the same time that my alternate and some of the other people's alternates are seeking that type of retribution, we have the easiest way to explain it, we have a protection type feeling that we also have a higher purpose, and that is to protect. Protect who? Protect what? We'll find out. You know, we're trying to find out.
It sounds, Duncan, as if the 197 personality is more like Jason Bourne in the movie. Would that be a rough analogy?
I didn't quite...
He doesn't go to movies, so he may not know, Bill, if you remember.
Jason Bourne, I've never seen the movies.
Understood.
I know about them. I've been told about them, but I've never seen them.
Well, in many ways, you are like Jason Bourne in the sense only that he was an agent who got amnesia, but he would actually kind of click over into that personality, but he didn't know the origins. So in many ways, he was like you. It's like a fictional version of some of the things you've told us about.
Yeah, okay.
I was suggesting that Jason Bourne sounded more like 197, actually, because Jason Bourne, like he'll kill if he has to. He wants to find out what the hell happened to him. He's very analytical. He's very determined. He keeps on going like the Terminator. He's determined to find the truth. He's a much higher ability person than most of the people around him, and he's very relentless. And it just sounded a little bit like that personality type was what you were describing 197 to be. That's why I made the link.
Okay, yeah, that clicks with me. I understand that. That has actually been mentioned to me before, and the one distinction that always comes to mind with the differences is, as I was told by several people who watched the movie, is that he's finally told that he, as an adult, volunteered for the program. The difference between that and us is we were kids and we didn't volunteer.
Absolutely. And it's very that's wonderfully and graphically described by you in our video interview of you, which if anyone's listening to this, I encourage them to go back and watch that, which is really fabulous. But quite right, you didn't volunteer, and we do remember that. So, Duncan, what are you seeing right now? Because I'm not sure, do you consider yourself a trained remote viewer, or is the psychic part of your sort of warrior personality more something that you developed but is not specifically a remote viewer?
I would have to classify myself as a remote viewer of using the scale of 1 to 10, about a 1. I suck. I'm terrible. I get what is more commonly known as psychic impressions. I'll see images. I'll see events happening, maybe only a brief glimpse of something that I have to sit down and dissect and take it apart and figure out exactly what it was that I saw.
Is 197 is 197 a remote viewer and or psychic?
Yeah. Yeah, 197 is extremely psychic. Much more so than I am.
Just a couple of days ago, I listened to Ed Dames being interviewed on Coast to Coast, and many of the people listening to this will also be familiar with Ed Dames' work. And he was asked by George Norrie whether he used psychics in his remote viewing program. And Ed Dames said, and it's really very interesting, he said psychics are not the same as remote viewers. He said psychics are either completely on or way off, and they can't always tell the difference. They don't use a methodology. Things just come to them spontaneously, and they almost have no control over it. He said remote viewing is a technology that can be taught, and Ed Dames said that he doesn't use psychics in his remote viewing program because they're actually harder to train because they keep on going off on their own intuitions without actually using the methodology. And I thought that was a very interesting distinction to make, and I would certainly regard you as being psychic and not someone who wants to get involved with very black and white linear remote viewing protocols. That's not really your style.
No, it isn't. I've tried remote viewing. You know, I've listened to Ed off and on for a few years. I have my own opinions about Ed Dames, but what he said is essentially correct. But I will say, however, that a lot of psychics, what they see is absolutely spot on. Where they make the mistake is trying to put a date to it or an exact location. Putting a date on a vision is something that's damn near impossible. Unless you see the date, you happen to see a newspaper or something of that nature with a date on it, it's almost impossible.
Well, I took a class from Ed Dames, and I have to say that I have studied remote viewing on and off besides that. And I have to say that he also stresses that even remote viewers have a very hard time finding dates for anything. So it's actually difficult regardless of what method you use. But I also know that that's not completely true. Ed Dames does use psychics, and as a matter of fact, Ingo was a very well-developed psychic who, you know, he's in essence, you might say, the father of remote viewing. And many remote viewers are natural psychics, and Pratt Price was a natural psychic. He was one of the first remote viewers. Joseph McMonagall is a natural psychic. I mean, the best remote viewers are often natural psychics as well. So what he's doing, a certain amount of dissembling there, I would say.
I can put my side of it together in a nice little nutshell. I'm a terrible remote viewer, but I do receive tremendous amount of psychic impressions. I do get glimpses of things like on a daily basis, and I will follow them. I'll turn left when I normally turn right. That kind of thing. If I shake hands with someone, I'll get an impression of what's really in their mind. I don't hear their thoughts. I don't read minds. I get impressions. I get pictures. I get what I call picting. Like when we did that first interview, remember when I asked you, I said, are you thirsty? And you said yes. When I looked at you, I got a flash, an image of a Pepsi. Now, it was my interpretation, That's, you know, what I interpreted to be is that you were thirsty.
Right. And actually there's where the psychic part can break down, because I don't drink Pepsi. So what you did was transpose it into what you drink. I totally get that. And I do remember that incident, which, you know, it's obvious that you are psychic when one meets you and sort of talks with you and so on. And with the Celtic and the Native American backgrounds, those two put together, obviously you were chosen in part for those, some of those qualities, right?
Yes, we were. But however, I will say, in 1966, when I was taken in, you know, a lot more memories have bubbled up to the surface since we did that interview. And I do remember children from various ethnic origins. We all of us weren't Native American and Celtic mixed, but we were the predominant species.
I understand. Can you tell us more about what maybe some incidents or some realizations that have come to you that might be interesting for the listeners here?
Well, I think the biggest realization that I've had to come to terms with and to deal with is that my father turned me over to this project. It was quite unnerving to find out on the island of St. Thomas, by the way, that my father was in a CIA asset, an agent. And that he basically gave the okay for me to be taken in. You know, he took me to have the test administered, and I obviously passed the test. And we've had some thoughts on that I'll get into in just a moment. When he may not have been able to have said no. However, I do hold the grudge that as I became older, he could have talked to me about it, but he chose not to. That's one of the things. Let me get this while it's fresh in my mind. Remember the puzzle, the picture on the puzzle that I had to put together was the double helix, the DNA molecule. Yeah, I put the piece together. However, there is a running theory that some of us have that it wasn't so much that we got the puzzle together correctly, but that we were able to pick up the psychic impressions from the test administrator.
On how to do so.
Correct.
Interesting.
That's a running theory that we have right now.
Okay. Very interesting. So that means that you know, your psychic ability was a very big part of why you were selected, is what you're saying.
Right. And I do remember vividly, most of the other kids were spending more time laughing, talking, playing with each other, while I was totally focused and concentrating on what I was doing. And that adds a little more credence to the fact that the lady who we now know's name is Elsa was probably broadcasting some kind of thought image and to see who could pick it up. But that was actually the real test.
That makes sense, Duncan, because I remember very clearly when you did your interview a couple of years ago, although there were so many things to talk about and think about, I didn't pick it up with you at the time, but I remember thinking, well, okay, there's a kid solving a puzzle here. And I remember you reporting that this woman said, hey, we got one, or words to that effect. But I remember
Right.
thinking, well, what was so special about a kid solving a puzzle? You know, kids solve puzzles all the time. And
Right.
But you're saying that, you know, that actually it was quite a simple puzzle, but what she was actually doing was she was directing you and you were following her directions, and that's how she knew that she got one.
Right, because while I was doing the puzzle, she was standing behind me. And by this time, she was totally ignoring the other kids. And she was standing behind me, focusing on me. And also, I remember my mother was focusing on me as well. Now, my mother was very psychic as well. Of course, she was full-blood Cherokee, and she would have dreams, visions, and 90% of them would turn out to be true. My father's grandfather was supposed to have been a Celtic druid. So when you put, you know, you put those two bloodlines together, I guess they got what they were looking for.
Yes, very interesting. So what is your psychic intuition telling you nowadays about the current times, what we're going through here in the United States, as well as the possible future?
Get ready to run. It's going to get bad. That has been there for some time, and it hasn't left. It's going to get nasty.
Can you describe it a little more specifically? I know you live in the middle of the country. Are you planning to stay there? You once told us the best thing to do during these times was to be mobile. Do you still feel that way?
I do. Be prepared to be mobile. What I have been seeing are cities and towns in total darkness, on fire, with people screaming. Some people just have just laid down in the street and just refused to get up. Some of them are very frightening. And in the darkness and the smoke, there is something that is coming through. It's very bad, very evil, but I can't see what it is. And this isn't any one particular city or town. This is pretty much going to be everywhere.
I presume that you haven't got a time on this.
A date? No, only an impression. And the impression is more intense now than it was the last we spoke. That it's getting closer. You know, I wish I could just say, okay, on this date, this is what's going to happen. But I can't. There's going to be a major political uprising in this country. This country politically is going to split right down the seam. It's going to tear itself in half. And I think that will happen within the next 2 years. Everybody, one of the things that a lot of people ask me about is 2012. Yeah, we are headed towards a culmination of events. I will not venture out and say that it will happen exactly on 2012. And the reason I say that is just due to the differences in calendars. No one can tell me exactly what today is. They can tell me what today is with the Julian calendar, an Aztec calendar, a Chinese calendar, but no one can actually tell me what today actually is. So whatever's coming may be 2011, 2012, 2013, 2014, and on it goes. But it is coming.
Are other people that you're sort of in a group now that you're talking about, maybe you're in contact with others that are like yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And are they also seeing things in the future? Do you compare notes at all?
We do. Some of us speak almost on a daily basis. One of the strongest psychics that I've ever known in my life has given more than one warning, and I've never known her to be wrong. And she said, and I'll quote her, "An evil wind does blow, and it's not going to stop." And she flat told me, "Get ready. I can't see what it is. I don't know what it is, but it's coming, and it's almost here."
Do you feel like possibly your personality, 197, could have been created in part to deal with those times in some form or fashion?
That's one of the things that we've been discussing. Yeah, we do. You know, like I've said, these people who created us were evil geniuses. There's no doubt about that. But even a genius can be wrong. There are things that have transpired with these alternate personalities that we believe were completely unforeseen by the creators. They've unleashed a Pandora's box. When they opened us up and let us out of Pandora's box, we were used for some very explicit evil deeds. And there's no doubt about that. And we're learning to deal with that. But if everyone remembers the story of Pandora's box, the last thing to exit the box was hope. So that's what we're putting together with the skills that we were ingrained with, trained and taught, is hope. To try to turn it around, do a complete 180, and use what we can to help. And we'll see how successful we are.
The group that you're working with, because of the emails that we get about this subject, people having told us that they watched your interview, and I remember one of the words that somebody said that it was really quite chilling. They said that they felt that you were telling their story on their behalf. We've had several messages like that. You must get more than we do. How many people are there out there who've been through your program and who've shared your experiences, who have contacted you over the last couple of years? What's the order of magnitude? Is it hundreds? How many people are there?
I have been contacted by many. I would say contacted personally, close to 100. And some of these people are in the group that we formed. And essentially what I am, I'm the mouthpiece for the group. And I personally think they should have chosen someone else. I have a tendency to go overboard occasionally. I do have a temper, even in this personality. And in some interviews, I have not been so kind with some callers who would come in with really overboard, off-the-wall, narcissistic questions. And I haven't been really kind. But it's a job that I've been stuck with, and I will continue to do the best I can do. To expand on your question, my project was 1966. I am what is known as second generation. I was contacted by someone who was in a very, very similar project in the 1950s. He would have been first generation. One of the people in our group was right after me. She was third generation. Another person in our group was about 15 years later. That person is fourth generation. So you see the progression. It hasn't stopped. It continues.
And the implication, Duncan, is that if you've been contacted, let's say, by the best part of 100 people, it doesn't take much for you and I to figure out that there must be thousands out there.
I would have to say yes. As a matter of fact, Dan, who we discussed earlier, has estimated from information that he has received from one of his, quote, CIA contacts, unquote, there is an estimated 1 million of us in one form or another, not necessarily as trained or put through what we have gone through, but a million like us in like ways.
I assume that these then are the products of the experimental technologies of different countries, not just the United States. Is that correct?
That is correct. These experiments and projects are not just home to the U.S. No, they've been all worldwide. As a matter of fact, I was contacted by someone in Russia who said that he was part of a very like project there.
Isn't it true, though, obviously Daniel should speak for himself here, but my understanding is that he feels that he was genetically engineered in part to be, in other words, it wasn't just training. There was actually genetic engineering that went on even, I guess, possibly before birth. Is that your understanding?
It is. It is. We discussed that. There's also been talk that the genetic engineering part started even in the first generation. As far as I'm concerned, which is actually the only one that I can truly speak for in this matter, I've been augmented. That much I know. My adrenal glands are much larger than normal. My bone density and mass is much more than normal. That's why I've never had a major broken bone before.
So, in other words, your mother, when she conceived you, could have participated, maybe unknowingly, in some kind of genetic program.
I'll tell you what one of our remote viewers said, and I think, you know, since you studied remote viewing, you probably know remote viewing is not only in the future and the present, it can also go backwards. They saw my mother in a hospital, the egg was removed, was injected, and then reimplanted. So if that is true, and I'm prefacing that, if that is true, then yes, definitely I was genetically altered.
Yeah, I think that in a certain sense, because I don't know, would you consider yourself a hybrid?
But I have given that a tremendous amount of thought. And with what I know now, even more so than when we did the first interview, I would have to say yes. Now, a hybrid to what? That's the question.
Right. Well, my understanding is, I mean, all of humanity is a hybrid in one form or another because we've been through so many different genetic engineerings, if you will. But you specifically, and a group of you, you're not unlike Dan Sherman, who I don't know if you ever saw his interview that we did with him. He was specifically engineered, genetically engineered. He has his own evidence of that with his mother. But he was
right.
Specifically engineered to communicate with ETs on a psychic and intuitive level.
You know, I've been asked that question a lot. Where do I fit in with ETs and the visitors and whatnot? I'm up front. I don't know. I have no memory of ever being on an alien craft or being face-to-face with one or anything like that. And I've said it publicly before, do I believe in extraterrestrial life? Yes, I do. I mean, my God, go out on a clear night and take a look. I mean, look up. I mean, to say that this little ball of rock floating around Sol is the only place of life on it, or intelligent life and its vastness, that's just not logical.
When you're in St. Thomas, are you aware of, as you said, you are aware of certain maybe directional scalar influences possibly being aimed at you? I know that we were interviewing you with Corso, and there's a very clear pulse that hit the stereo when it was turned off when we were actually during the interview. When you're on St. Thomas, are you seeing, number one, maybe an unusual amount of craft in the sky and or activity? Are you just aware of activity there that might be unusual or different than possibly what you find around you when you're in the U.S.?
Yeah, actually, that's a good question. Two things. It seems like the time the plane lands, the plane takes off, I have a headache. It's not a migraine. It's nothing I need to take a break from. But it's right there. It's right in the center of my forehead the whole entire time I'm on island. The only other thing is someone made a comment that there's always a very large Coast Guard ship in dock when I'm there with some real big high-grain antennas on it. And it's never there unless I'm there.
Interesting. Are you aware of any underground activity there?
Well, probably so. But a lot of people may not know about the island of St. Thomas. It's a mountain island. The property that I have is on the top of the second highest mountain there, and you go up on top and you can see the entire island. So I would have to say probably so. There's probably underwater connecting tunnels to some of the channel islands that docked that whole area. I'll send you guys some pictures and you'll see what I'm talking about.
Well, if there's a submarine, you said the largest submarine base in the world is in between there and Puerto Rico?
No, it's actually off the coast of Puerto Rico.
Okay.
It's off the northern coast.
I wondered, because you said you had a property there in St. Thomas, if this was one of your plan Bs in case anything gets too rough in America, then you've got somewhere to go. You have to leave the mainland. I wondered if you were thinking that far ahead.
Oh, I have. It's funny. I have more friends on St. Thomas than I do in the States, actually. My attorney is on St. Thomas. I actually have some relatives on St. Thomas. There are records of my family doing land transactions on that island dating back to the 1780s. If I had not seen those with my own eyes, I would not have believed it. No, I'm sorry. It's the 1840s. The 1780s is when Captain Fanning, an ancestor of mine, founded Fanning Island, which is on the other side of the world. He was a pirate, okay? He was about as scandalous as
could be. Interesting. Yeah. Well, if you have family records on St. Thomas, it might also explain how they might have found you, assuming that you were not genetically, implanted. Because it seems that, like, St. Thomas is some kind of a base.
Oh, definitely. Most definitely. St. Thomas and St. Croix. St. Croix is also a refueling base as well, has a large Air Force contingent. Puerto Rico has one of the largest military presence per capita than any other place on the mainland USA. They have naval base, air base, army base, marine base, you name it, they got a base there.
Right. Incredible.
We've had a number of people who've written to us, having seen your first video when you described how you were in the MRI machine and it started to pick up this implant that was in your head and the thing caught fire.
Right.
A number of people have said to us, hey, wait a minute, an MRI machine doesn't catch fire. Did you really mean an MRI machine, or is this a different kind of machine that I don't know about? Or is there any clarification that you can offer on that?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It wasn't the actual machine. It was the control panels. And what I was told later on after that is that there was feedback. If I'm understanding this correctly, an MRI machine acts just a little like radar when it brings the image back, and that's what happened. It wasn't exactly the machine itself, if that makes any sense.
That clarifies things a lot, actually, for the more technically minded people out there, because an MRI machine is a magnetic resonance imager. It works on magnetic resonance, and
right.
If it was resonating magnetically with something, then I could imagine some kind of a resonance pulse would set up that actually would create problems.
Yeah, because what happened is there was no problems. When they pushed me back into the tunnel, there was no problem. They started talking to me, no problem. And then as soon as that thing started to spin and make the sound when the magnetic waves began to start, it was like someone drove a hot spike through my skull. And that's when I started seeing all the images, all the memories, all the blood, the gut, the mayhem, the whole gauntlet. And I came out absolutely screaming. And I could smell the smoke. And the techs and the nurses were trying to get a hold of me, get a handle on me and calm me down, which I was told was extremely hard to do. Because it was like somebody having a total breakdown. I remember screaming.
That sounds like one of the kind of experiences that could have triggered one of your other personalities at that time.
Very true. Very true.
Okay. Thanks for clarifying that, Duncan. I've got a final question. How do you see, or how would you like to see, your own life playing out in the next few years? What do you see ahead of you? Because you're here as a warrior, not just for the military, but for the human race and representing this bunch of people who want you to be their spokesman and their leader and their representative. And you've played a hero's role here. So you're fighting a fight, but not in the way that the military intended you to. How do you see things playing out in the next few years for yourself?
What I'd like to see and what I have seen is two entirely different things. What I would like to see is some admissions by some governments that these operations took place, are taking place and they stop and just have some peace and watch the kids grow up, 2 acres and the lawn, and have a little woodworking shop or something. That's what I would like, but that's not what I'll ever have. What I have seen is myself and others of the group leading groups of people to safety. That's what I've seen. And that's also what some of the other people in the group have seen. You know, 'cause it's going to get so hot.
Exactly. I think the times are coming, right?
Definitely. And they're coming a lot faster than some people realize. And when they start, it's going to be like a domino effect. You know,
exactly.
Once the precursor hits, and the precursor is going to be a total split in the political system in this country. And that's going to happen. And once that happens, all bets are off. It's going to be crazy.
Yeah, I think I've seen one version of that myself, so. Okay, thank you, Duncan. That's a rather sobering ending for this brief chat we've been having with you. But I do appreciate the vision. It's quite interesting. We're looking forward to having you at our conference. It's very exciting to know that you're going to speak to the people. That's just going to be wonderful. And thank you very much for connecting with us here. This is a rare treat for us to be able to really connect with you and then at the same time actually be able to record it so that we can share it with others.
Well, I appreciate it, and thank you two guys very much.
This is a very good one, Duncan. You're a star, and thank you so much for spending your time here.
No problem, guys. Anything for you guys.
God bless you, and you take care of yourself and take care of everybody else you can.
You do as well, bud.